Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Press One for Democracy. This is your host, Dan Aronson. Coming at you live here on Blog Talk Radio, one of the four coffee party shows that you hear every week. Ours is, I guess we can call it the first Monday. Last one is Saturday, I guess it's Egberto's. But we are here to touch on the issues of the day. Listen to our callers, hear what they have to say, of course, as I always like to start out with a show by saying, this is a caller participation show, and nobody wants to sit here and listen to me talk for 90 minutes or 2 hours. So, as always, callers, we not only welcome you, but we urge you to call in, be part of the show, have your voice heard. One of the things that we do here in Coffee Party Radio Land is we want to make sure that we have a microphone for you, the listener, and to call in and express your views. But, of course, we always want to do it, and that's kind of the theme of tonight's show, in the coffee party way. And that coffee party way is very simply underscored as we want to have civil, we want to have fact-based, and we want to have transpartisan conversation on the issues of the day. And it's kind of a thing that I've been saying for a long time, and it took on a little bit of a new meaning. I kind of had a satori, a mini spiritual awakening this week when I was having a back and forth with somebody that didn't really want to talk about the issues. All they really wanted to talk about was politics. And I realized that there's a very, very, very different things. And so that's kind of the theme of the show tonight is like, how do we separate out the politics from the actual issues? Politics, I don't know, It's about as four-letter a word as I can think of these days, and it is not inseparable from the issues. But when people make it that way, or when people make it about politics and not about the issues, that's when we have the divisiveness. That's when we have the hateful rhetoric. That's when we have the intractability. Is when people decide I'm going to put a stake in the ground and I'm not moving. It kind of reminds me of the gentleman that tied himself up to a palm tree once in Florida, a hurricane was coming, and the palm, and he was a 50-year-old workout nut, and he ties himself to a palm tree, and he said, "I'm going to prove that I can wait out this storm. I can beat this storm because I'm just that." So he did. So he literally ties himself to a tree. Well, they find him dead the next day. What a shock! And the comedian Ron White had the perfect line. He said, "It's not that the wind is blowing 120 miles an hour in a hurricane. It's what the wind is blowing at 120 miles an hour in a hurricane." He said, "If God decides to pick up a Volvo and hit you with it, you don't have much of a chance if you're strapped to a tree." So maybe we'll make that guy our poster boy for intractability and the fact that nothing but really it's just a destructive policy and it's a destructive stance to take. But again, that's really about the politics of it, and it's not about the issue. When we start talking about the issues and what the effects of on our society as a whole and individually as well as our society as a whole, that's really, I think, where we can start to have some movement, have some intelligent conversation, have some intellectually honest conversation, because in the end, I think most people, we know where we want to go. We've decided this is the place we want to go. This is the country or the direction we want the country to take, or we want the country to move in. And maybe we just disagree a little bit about how we get there. But again, if we stick to the issues and we don't talk the politics, of the issues, and we don't talk about, well, the lefties say this, and the righties say this, or the liberals say this, or the conservatives say that, or the Democrats say this, and the Republicans, well, they're the problem. And we don't finger point, you know, make these big generalizations and label people and then decide, hey, this is how they feel. And because we decide how they feel, we then can say, see, it's their fault because they feel this way. Instead of doing the intelligent thing, which is going, hey, Mr. Conservative, how do you feel about this? And actually having and engaging in a conversation. We just decide, hey, this is how they feel, this is how they act, and we don't like that, and so we're just going to vilify them. And then it becomes a personal back and forth, and nobody ends up talking about the issues, which is probably why, you know, very little has been done legislatively since the beginning of Obama's first administration, right? So we had universal health care passed, or without universal health care. Sorry, I apologize. Obviously not universal health care. I just don't like calling it Obamacare. I know that they've now I don't want to talk about that, but I don't want to say it in those terms. We've had the Affordable Health Care Act passed. That was obviously huge legislation. Probably, I mean, there's really not much else you can point to, although maybe somebody will call in and tell me, nah, you're all wet, here's all the other great things that have happened. But I just don't see anything that significant having happened. And again, not the president's fault. He doesn't set the legislative agenda per se. I mean, obviously he has the pulpit. He has the big microphone. He gets to tell people what he'd like to see happen. But in the end, it's Congress. And we know that I actually haven't looked in a long time. Once Congress's approval rating got below double digits, I went, it's just these guys are helpless or hopeless or both. I don't know. I don't know which. But anyway, if I sound like I'm a little bit on edge this fine Monday, and it is a fine Monday, I have really nothing to complain about. I'm staring out at the Willamette River. It's a beautiful sunny day. It's about 78, 77 degrees. It's heard me say it many times. I believe it's their plan. I believe it's what they want, because while we're at each other's throats, not only are we not getting anything done, we're not getting consensus, and then they're off at Washington doing what they do best, which is look out for themselves and their big money masters who help them get elected and who lobby them, and folks like Alec who show up at their doorsteps with nice shiny pieces of legislation and presents to go along with that legislation should they get passed. So I just trying to we got to try to figure out if the mission is it doable. Have we seen, you know, because they talk about goals, right? They say goals should be achievable, they should be specific, they should be achievable. And see, if Michael Charney was here, he would tell me what these were, because that's what he does for a living, or part of what he does for a living. He's a meeting facilitator. And he has all of these great acronyms. I forget what goal is supposed to be, but there's an acronym for it. But they should be specific. They should be attainable. They should be definite. And they should have a time frame associated with them, so a point at which we should have this done. So the question is, the question before us is does the Coffee Party have the right mission? Are we doing a good job in promoting that mission? Is it an attainable mission? Are we too pie in the sky with this whole idea of civility? Is it just not? Is it so unpopular that people are just like, forget it. It's more fun to fight and to put on the boxing gloves and go at it with other people, or is it the only? Do we feel it's the only way we're going to get anywhere? All these questions are just been piling up in my mind here as we in the Coffee Party experience life post-Michael Charney. So if you're not familiar, last week Michael Charney tendered his resignation as a board of directors member, as well as the host of, or the co-host, I should say, of The Middle Ground. And it was a lot of this just not seeming to be able to get anywhere on the matters of civility, on the matters of transpartisanship, and making the coffee party what we thought it was intended to be. And so I want to talk about our mission. I want to talk about are we on the right track? Is there something to be gained from Michael's loss? And and then we can talk about anything, of course, that the callers really want to talk about. It is a caller-driven show. We can catch up on some of the things that are growing, the growing dissatisfaction worldwide with the TPP. We can talk about gun control. We can talk about anything you want, and maybe just look to make sure that we keep the conversation coffee party-esque, right? So with that, I have my first caller of the evening whose hand is up. And before I go to 724 and bring you in here, just to remind everybody, our call-in number here is 646-929-2495. And when you get into the queue, just push 1, and that'll let me know you want to speak. So with that, I'll open up 724, and who do I have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hey, Dan, it's Greg.
Hey, Greg, how you doing? Greg Rusick.
Well,
longtime caller and guy who often is able to talk me off a ledge.
Well, I'm happy to do it, man. I don't want you going over any ledges. We're going to see if we can reel Michael back in one of these days, I guess, right?
Well, he said he's going to stay he's a member, and he's going to be involved as a member, but he just stepped aside in his leadership role, and it's been tough for me. I'll be honest with you. It's been very tough for me this week, trying to wrap my mind around that, because Michael represented, I think, a paradigm shift and an element that was missing and is still missing, and to some extent, I believe, is being pushed. It has been pushed aside for many years. And so, I mean, it's kind of tough
within
for
the
me,
coffee
but,
party?
Sorry?
Are you talking about specifically within the coffee party or just in general?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Michael was asked into his leadership role because first of all, he represented a moderate Republican. Obviously, Michael, if you know Michael, he wasn't a Tea Party guy. He wasn't, he wasn't insanely to the right. He was a moderate Republican that was willing to engage in a transpartisan civil manner. And so the whole idea was, especially on the middle ground, right? You had Eric Beiler, who's left-leaning. You had Michael, who's right-leaning. And they could have different guests on and talk about different subjects and have, coffee party-esque conversation. It was almost like here's how it should be done. Let me give you the model. And that's what the whole middle ground was about. And, Michael said he did about 80 shows and enjoyed it. And, but he didn't see that we were getting closer. He just saw too much from the left bashing the right within the party.
It wasn't
the only issue, the only reason why he quit, but that was
right.
That was one of his big issues.
And it's hard to disagree with that. I didn't pay nearly as close attention to everything that happened online and on the shows and everywhere else as I would like to, but I don't disagree, nor do I dispute the notion that the left can be just as mean and ugly as the right can be. And I think, regrettably, social media seems to have open up a lot of opportunities for people to kind of take the humanity out of that communication and simply go with, what they think is clever or snarky or even downright nasty. And I don't deny that on occasion I have fallen into that same trap. I wonder if anybody is as passionate and concerned about how things are going today in the United States wouldn't find themselves occasionally doing that. If they don't, they're a better man or woman than I could ever be.
I will definitely cop to having been that person, and I always felt like I was punching back, but you know what? It's no more right for me to punch back than it is for somebody to throw the first punch. And right. I've gotten, and I don't want to say sucked in, because I do believe in a heaping helping of personal responsibility. And so the fact is that if somebody insults you, you and you alone decide what your next move is. You know, I think a lot of people say, well, you know, he started it. Well, so what?
Right.
You finish it. or do the war games thing, right? The only winning move is not to play. So the options are there, and I will absolutely admit in the past to have been allowing myself I've lost it. I've absolutely lost it. As I think I talked about last week, going on tilt, that's what the poker players call it.
Right.
And just turning into a bull in a china shop. So,
what separates the bull in the china shop from people like you and I who occasionally will go on tilt is that we recognize the downside of that behavior. We're willing to admit to it. We're even willing to apologize to one another when it happens. And it doesn't make it right, but at least it gives people an opportunity to get past it. I think one of the things that doesn't happen on either extreme is that people will never really kind of step back and consider what they've done or said with an adult's perspective and say, you know what, that was stupid. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I could have put it another way. I didn't mean to attack you. I'm about the issue. You know, whatever the circumstance or the issue is, adults have a lot harder time saying I'm sorry than kids do. We somehow lose that ability as we grow old, I guess. And I think a lot of what – and I'm not going to speak for Michael because I have no idea what, you know, exactly why he's doing what he's doing in terms of taking a break, but I can see why he would, because he is he's a lone voice in this wilderness of mostly liberal and left-leaning voices, I think, that are in the coffee party. Although I will say there are a couple of very active participants on the Facebook pages and on the posts that are anything but liberal. And it's good that they're still engaged, and it's good that they're still active. And I think when it comes to the trolls, you just got to try and find a way of ignoring them. But, you know, maybe one of the big questions you've asked tonight, the reason I pressed one, was, you know, what is the mission of the coffee party going to be? And it's not just because somebody like Michael is deciding to take a break, but it is a bigger question. I've been kind of a follower and a participant and a member off and on, frankly, for a couple of years now. And while I'm happy to have the environment to engage in adult and rational conversation about the challenges, about the things that are going on that you won't hear about in other places, you know, you'll never get most of what we talk about in a mainstream media news broadcast. I just for fun, I listened to a 10 o'clock local news show for about 20 minutes last night. And I was like, no wonder I don't watch this anymore. How many times do I have to hear about a fire or a car wreck? This doesn't help me. It's not useful.
Never understood that. Never understood that. Well, I see we got some more folks joining us, so just wanted to let you know, yes, you come to the right place if you're looking for Press One for Democracy. You got Dan Aronson, host. You got Greg Resick, consistent contributor. I don't know. I got to come up with a better word for that.
A loud mouth.
But we've got a couple of people in queue. I've got 518-847. We'll be coming to you guys next. So were you asking for just maybe a clearer definition of the mission? Is that what you were saying? Or
well, you know what? It wouldn't hurt to hear that again, just to kind of get what is it that's, you know, written on the mission statement web page, perhaps. But my bigger question really is, what more are we going to be as a group of 400 and some people, potentially, ostensibly, connected in with one another on some level on Facebook, as an example? What are we going to do besides have civil conversation? We've got some movements in place. We've got some campaigns underway. We're trying to activate the group along a mission around money and politics. But are we having the effect that we want? Are we
right.
having the
and
desire?
Are we achieving the mission? So you've actually hit on a couple of things that I think need to be discussed, but also that are separate. So let me start with the mission statement. And so what I've done is I've gone to coffeepartyusa.com/mission_statement. I send a lot of people here when I suggest to them that they may be a little confused about what we're trying to accomplish. So The mission statement is building, nurturing, and connecting communities to reclaim our government for the people. Okay? So that's, I'm going to cut that and paste that here into the chat. So again, that's building, nurturing, and connecting communities, right? So when we talk about communities and we talk about transpartisanship, I think, you know, it can't be said enough. The easiest place to find transpartisanship at work is in a local community, right? And the example I always give is the same. We talk about education. And if you listen to Michael Czerny's last Middle Ground, he said that that was one of the things that he thought some candidate might step forward with. He thought, I asked him, I said, how do we unite the country? He said, somebody has to step forward with some broad, sweeping, wide tent idea that everybody would go, yeah, I want that. And he talked about Kennedy with the space race. And although that wasn't necessarily the most political motivating thing in the world, it did unite us. We united as a country. I mean, I'm sure you remember every time there was a launch from Gemini to Apollo, we were all stuck in front of our TVs watching that launch. It was just a galvanize. It was something to galvanize. And the first thing he came up with was education. He said maybe a candidate will step forward and say, you know what, by the time I'm done, we are going to reclaim our – we're going to restake our claim as the greatest educating nation in the world. He said something to that effect because, again, there's a transpartisan thing. Who is going to stand up and say, I'm not for education. I don't think we should be for education. I don't think we should have good schools. I mean, nobody's going to say that, right? And if you live in the same neighborhood with people from all over the political spectrum, your kids still go to the same schools. And your kid, and so you're going to agree, hey, our local schools should be the best schools they could be. And people have even said this is what's wrong with Washington, D.C. today because people don't live there. The politicians used to move there and live there and interact with people. And so they had these things in common, these common goals. Now they don't have those. They have apartments and they live back home. And so maybe that's an issue. So we've got a ton of callers in queue. But that's really the mission statement. And then it goes down to talk about the vision statement, the civility pledge, core values. What I've been working on behalf of a request from the board is to even codify it even more clearly and to bring it down to maybe specific actionable items as to what it is. Then we can talk about our issues, right? So there's two really different things. This is how we want to change the conversation and change people's behavior. I mean, in the end, we are that. That's what we are. We are shrinks trying to help people communicate that, you know, we're marriage counselors, I guess. Maybe that's the best analogy. Trying to get people who aren't seeing eye to eye to at least, let's figure out how to get in the same room and have a conversation and move towards a common goal. So that's it. That's it in a nutshell to me. The issues are, yeah, the issues are just what we're talking about. But it's really not about what we're talking about. The mission is how do we talk about that in a way that is constructive and in a way that gets us to where you want to go.
I think you've got a tall task in front of you. I think you're the right man to try and help to codify that. I think the ideas that Michael was talking about around something that would just be universally the objective, the means by which to achieve it, obviously always open for discussion and debate, but something that a real leader could step forward on to use as a way to cut through all the BS and all the clutter, and that would actually be meaningful, not just be something that would attract attention, but actually create the kind of environment that we want. And yeah, education is a great idea. Good luck.
Well, thanks, Craig. Always a pleasure, sir. We're going to go to 518. 518, you are on the air with Dan Aronson of Press One for Democracy. This is Joe. Is this Joe?
Yes, Joe.
Yes, Joe Pomponio. How are you, Joe?
Over to New York. Real good, Dan. Transpartisanship. Something I've been trying to manifest I'm also a member of MoveOn.org here in Albany. Well, actually, in Saratoga, though I live in Albany. And I've really come up against a brick wall as far as transpartisanship. What I've discovered by going to town halls, and issues with fracking, with elements that, let's say, an opposing party presents. And I do this in where postings and things I've discovered in way of advertising searching for education. Simply put, I can't get a response from the people I want to discuss this with. In the way of town halls, now, my representative is pretty open. If you go to one of his town halls, it's almost like a, I mean, I hate to put it this way, but it's true. He's like a rock star. I mean, it's standing room only. Good luck finding parking. It's civilized. People speak. No one interrupts. You get your point across, the answers. I'm not going to go into the, you know, plus or minuses of this, but he addresses his constituency. Now, my understanding, if I were to, per se, want to go to another town hall of a person of the opposing party, all right, you're not allowed in unless you are a member of that party and a supporter. In terms of legislation, at least on a state level, if you oppose something, let's use fracking, something that I'm involved in, when you go to websites that purport that it's good for you, they won't let you participate unless you support their point of view, right? Education. I happen to be a person that feels education should be that. It should be something that deals with overall understanding of the world we live in, the community, the state, the government we live in. What I'm seeing and what I've checked out is they want private education. You can get subsidies for this. Not in my states, but in other parts of the country. And what they do is narrow the education to be something of the line where learn how to earn money and don't worry about anything else. Now, I mean, I understand we're supposed to be transpartisan. I understand we want to speak to the other side, but how do you get the other side to speak with us? You see what I'm up against here?
Yeah. Well, sure. But, I mean, you know, and I hate to break it down to such a, I don't want to say remedial, but I mean such a blatant truth, Joe, and that is, it's the old you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. I mean, you know, but the question is, what? All right, let me ask it to you this way: what other choice do we have but to sit down at the table and wait for somebody to sit down in that other chair?
Well, here, let me give you what I've tried to do. On my Facebook page, I have a website that, you know, I liked, and they're called Watchtalk. Now, they are obviously a person of, let's say, different points of view than I have. But in watching that website, they have demonstrated things basically against a certain party that exhibits money in politics, that the money in politics in this or the influence in this is a reason to oppose them. And what I do in my comments is try to invite them here. I tend to agree with them, you know, on both sides of the spectrum. Money is corrupting, and it's something that if we all address universally, we can discuss this and try to remove it. The comments to that are one-sided, much as Greg brought out earlier, a lot of our members or followers seem to exhibit. And, you know, I have to kind of empathize with Michael. You know, it's like being up against a wall, right, with nowhere to turn. You just can't get people to sit down and see what is affecting us and the best course for us to resolve it. It's either you're on my side or you're not. And it's baffling to me.
Well, that's very interesting that you say that. So, and I said, I give you a 404 in here in a second, but maybe this is just a general idea, right? So when you're saying you're trying to engage the guys from the other party, right? So
well, the opposite point of view.
Right.
I don't try to view this party.
So if I might, right, my current thinking on this is there are three parties in this country, and I won't even include Eric Beiler's favorite fourth party, which is Big Money, who he says drowns out everybody else, and he's got a really good point. But of the people you can reach, because you can't reach the Big Money guys because they're up in their corporate ivy towers and you can't reach them. None of us have enough money. But if the three parties are the Democrats, the Republicans, and the I don't votes, right? And they go. I always love quoting that 2012 statistic, right? 60 million people for Romney, 65 for the president and approximates, and then 81 million people that didn't vote. So maybe the answer is instead of running your head into a brick wall again and again with – I don't want to say it that way. Let me say it this way. Maybe you go for the point of least resistance. Maybe the answer is to we reach out to the disenfranchised, those 81 million people that were just so sick of all of it that they just dropped out. And maybe that's the place to start instead of always necessarily going for, you know, picking the toughest target, right? It's like maybe we need to try a couple of layups and then we can go for a three-pointer.
Good point. You know,
now the question is, how do we find him? And I got a guy that I want to open his mic and I want to bring him in because he, if I'm not missing my guess and looking at this number, I'm pretty sure I know this is, but he is in the midst of those 81 million people or people who are looking to connect with those 81 million people. Mr. Rodrigo.
How are you?
I'm good, man. How you been? It's been a while.
It has. I missed you last week. I took a break and had to reboot, you know. And then Michael left. I'm like, damn. You know,
that was it. He said, Bobby missed the show. I'm leaving. Yeah, he told me to tell you, by the way, it was all your fault.
So let me start off by saying, obviously, the simple thing is not working. You all have lost your mind. And let's move on from there. You know, God, I've said a couple of things over the years at the Coffee Party. One of the things that I thought was necessary at one time is that the Coffee Party needed to get into the political arena. And back a candidate or candidates, you know, that fit a mold. You know, we put together a bullet points and if they fit, then that's who we back. And I don't think that's the way we want to go. And I actually was intelligently talked out of that mindset by, you know, you guys collectively in a sense, you know, it's more important to have us engaged. And I agree. And yes, I am reaching out to the 81 million with the Free and Equal Election Foundation and trying to break up the two-party monopoly. And damn it, that's the plan. And I want everybody. I could care less what your ideology is. I want you all in the same building talking about it. And we can wave at the NSA and we can have drone patrol with, you know, protection and stuff like that while we're doing it. But in all seriousness, if you I like the thought of the single issue approach in the sense of, like we were talking about, what would inspire people? You know, what subject? And education was mentioned. I actually would reject that education would work, considering the polarized nature of the education debate that is currently going on in this country from every direction possible. The Department of Education is a big thorn in the liberty movement side. It's a big thorn in the conservative movement side and the big government side. And on the flip side, it is the argument against it is a big thorn in the progressive side. I think, as Joe was pointing out a little while ago, I think that the issue is, again, the right issue is money and politics. I don't see how it isn't. I do think that that issue crosses all the lines, regardless. But without question, the Coffee Party, from the standpoint of the social media, I guess, and to some degree the radio broadcasts, are certainly, if they're the side, it's more to the left. Egberto Wildes is certainly a progressive. Eric Byler is certainly a progressive. I think you're an anarchist, but that's just because you live in Oregon.
I'm going to let that slide, my friend. Go ahead.
No, actually, I consider you a pragmatic. Actually,
I'll take that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I do. I consider you very pragmatic. You have a very clear view of things. I really like Michael's view. I actually talked to him. Well, it was more me talking through messaging, but I was actually messaging him because, to me, the trap has been the label. When I first started with the Coffee Party, I had created a radio show called Common Ground. But my common ground was not the right and the left. My common ground was the facts, which is the only thing I want to live by is the facts. And I think, you know, labels suck. And I think that that's been one of the traps is that the show, as good as it is, as good as the hosts are, I think the trap is the labels itself, which draws what it draws. It, to me, the approach should be more transpartisan. So instead of saying, you know, having the progressive approach, and mind you, I don't believe that anybody should be punished because of their ideology, obviously. But from the standpoint of the Coffee Party, I think the ideology needs to be removed. You've heard me say, for example, on elections, I would like to walk into an election booth and not see a party at all next to a name when you vote. And
individual. Yeah. You know, Bobby, why that would never work, right?
Yeah. They won't know who the name is. You need an educated electorate.
Exactly. You'd have to actually know who each of the guys was and what he stood for.
But okay, I get all that. But here's the thing. It doesn't work the way it is now. For example, we're all educated people here. We all study history. We know how elections work. Okay. Without question, in my mind, the reason that the John Kerry, George Bush election went the way it did, for example, is 22 states, if you want to talk about right and left, 22 states put same-sex marriage on the ballot to bring out the base. And not one of them had passed, of course. They were actually, it was actually a negative same-sex marriage push. And so all the conservatives came out, and that's how Bush carried so many states. Because it wasn't.
I have a little bit different view as to why Bush won and Kerry didn't. Because horrifically horrible, terrible mechanism called the Electoral College.
Yes. What I'm saying works within the Electoral College, because you're talking about getting the states the all or nothing, all that stuff, which, you know, I try not to even get into a debate about that with myself, let alone with somebody else, because right now I just wish people would be more knowledgeable about what's going on so we could try and fix things, and that would be one of them, of course. But it was more of a strategy. So my point is that if you had that same issue on the ballot, but you didn't attach it to a party, then it still would have mattered that they would have had to pay more attention to the individuals that were running. Now, not so much as a presidential thing, you know, but as the other one. If we're going to be transpartisan, then let's remove the titles from everything that we broadcast and be transpartisan. And you know, go after the issues that are cross-pollinating, whatever they may be, whatever we decide they are. There are many issues, and you know, that we'll argue about. But one of the ones we don't argue about is money and politics. Most of the people who call and participate in our social media, we meet in public. The serious people who are upset about what's going on, they don't like that at all. And if you lead them to the promised land and connect all the dots, where that goes, everywhere, it goes everywhere in our society through our political machine, then that might be our NASA, you know, our moonshots, our internet, or whatever it is, in order to do that. But I think that one of the things we should do is remove the political ideologies from, like, all the shows, for example, and all the... You know, all the, let's really be transpartisan, solution-based, factually teaching about issues. Maybe that works.
Well, and I, as part of my rant, I really was ranting at the beginning of the show, I specifically talked about how to get the conversation away from politics. And what's the right doing? Oh, what's the left doing? Oh, how are they stopping this? Let's just talk about the issues. But here's a point of frustration you just brought up. And so first of all, I agree with everything you just said. But here's a point of frustration, and this is what America as a whole has failed to wrap its, unfortunately, in too many cases, tiny minds around. Or 1% media controlled minds around. Within a month after Citizens United came down, after the decision came down, there was a poll. There was extensive polling done. 72% of all Americans disagreed with the verdict. 80% of all Americans, I'm sorry, disagreed. 70% vehemently disagreed, and 72% said they wanted their legislators to do something about it. They wanted to pass a law. They wanted Congress to pass a law just changing that and getting, you know, to overcoming the bill. 72%. There are not too many things I don't think you're going to find 70 to 80% of Americans galvanized around. So here's my point of frustration. Why did Washington not hear that, or how did we let them get away with ignoring it?
Because they have the money. I mean, it's a simple answer. You know, they put American Idol on television. They have we have Northwest being born, and I know who JWoww is. I thought the greatest, one of the funniest things Louis Black said in his one of his recent rants was, "I know who JWoww and Snooki are. I've never seen the show, and because of how we are in our media." And they distract us all the time. Look at what happened just in the last 12 months from the standpoint of legislation that actually was passed by such an overwhelming majority by Congress in secret, or some of the things that were decided on the Supreme Court not in secret, but without being discussed upon. It is the great fallacy is the wrong word. It's the great trick of how our country operates and how the media operates and how we fall into it. But does that mean that we should stop? What choice do you have?
So you recall them.
Our system and we go. Well, I know what I want to do. I mean, I know what choice we have as far as making it right. But what choice do we have other than try and get people inspired to do something about it? We need
okay.
to do that.
Now, all right, so and this is where we kind of drift into Egberto land, right? Because if you look at Egberto's, a lot of his blogs and his posts and his emails, he's had the same tagline on the end of his emails and his posts for a long time, and that is something to the effect of perhaps class warfare is the only way we're going to win.
I suppose that is one avenue. But I think so many parts of our society are being hurt right now, with the exception of very few, in some degree, that it really is going to be a revolution that's just going to continue to build and build. You know, you talk to a lot of people. We all talk to a lot of people. And I get the frustrations that Joe is having when you're in an ideological discussion, the political discussion, as you mentioned. But one of the things that's happened with the Free and Equal Election Foundation and then my involvement with Christina Tobin has been I'm getting hits and discussions and openings from all across the spectrum. And you think about just her, for example, looking at this. Her history is she put Ralph Nader on the ballot in 45 states. And Jesse the Ventura is going, and Gary Johnson and Jill Stein are going to speak at this at our event. And just think of that. You want to talk about transpartisan. You don't get much more than that right there. You know, I mean, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, I mean, as a matter of fact, Gary was the word was, and I wasn't in the room, so this is secondhand. I'll take it for what it's worth. But he didn't want to be on the same stage as Jill Stein. And it's like, really, Gary? Is it the point that you want to be on the ballot so you can possibly become president of the United States and do your views? Isn't that more important than the fact that you happen to be doing the same thing with somebody who's transpartisan? I mean, the problem goes all the way up. But
well, and that has to be about as silly a thing as I've ever heard. Unless they're just using it as a political springboard. But let's face it. I mean, between the two of them, they got about 1.2% of the vote, I think, in 2012.
Yeah, I was actually looking at the results of the vote of last week. It was one of my research projects. I wanted to see how many people voted. I'm a big Rocky Anderson fan, and more so just for the past week than I kind of put him aside after the election and didn't think about it because I really I paid attention during that. And I got to stop doing that because I like his platform. It's hard for me to find something I disagree with, which is hard to say in our climate. But again, I was looking at the voting response. You know, but the fact remains is that they were voted for, and that the alternative debates, the alternative party debates, you know, were broadcast to 20 million people. Well, hopefully, you know, they all voted regardless of who they voted for. That was the whole point anyway. I just think that maybe we need to tweak. It's almost like, let's look at it this way. You take the Press One for Democracy, Lunch with Loudon, Middle Ground, and Politics Done Right. Well, for the most part, your show may be, out of all four, your show might be the closest to a fully transpartisan theme, let's say. Week in and week out. Maybe the approach is that we tweak it and maybe add more shows to where you have your ideological shows, and then you have your shows focused on the money in politics, the shining light, the transpartisan thing, and do it that way. You know, I think maybe there needs to be a little tweaking there because I don't like the labels anyway. They don't work for me, and I find myself in agreement with a lot of different ideologies when it comes to liberty issues, when it comes to a constitution, you know, and certainly when it comes to facts, and certainly when it comes to our ridiculous media. It's just, if you sit there and you study them, you're catching them lying all the time, all of them. It's amazing. And if it isn't a lie, it's a slant. So they want to formulate our arguments, form their and give us their opinions, and they don't want to tell us the facts so we can figure it out for ourselves. and go argue with our neighbor, which is what we're trying to do, is get us all engaged with our community. So, and our neighbors, all they're getting, because we all work, you know, so you turn the news on when you're going to the, when you're going to work, you know, or whatever you're doing, wherever you get your shot of news in your life, you're getting a bunch of crap, and that's formulating the arguments that our neighbors are having with each other, and neither side knows what the hell they're talking about. It's amazing.
Right. I hear you. Well, then that's so right. So we are obviously fighting an uphill battle. We're fighting against money in politics. We're fighting against the 1%. We're fighting against the 1% media. We're fighting against people who willingly give over control of their brains to these so-called pundits. Who for the most part are totally intractable. So, right. So here's the thing. Can we win?
Used to be at one time we were fighting somebody walking down in our city with a gun that was going to kill us if we didn't fly the British flag. I would say.
Joe, what do you say?
It's going to be a long haul.
Okay.
You're going to overcome. You're going to have to overcome money. You're going to have to overcome one-sidedness, and that's on both sides of the spectrum. Okay, I tend to lean progressive, but I have to admit there are elements on that side that takes things to extremes even I don't understand. When you try to explain to them something in the way of money and politics, they don't want to see it, okay? They will take a side that, no, my position and these people are absolutely right without accepting that they are being influenced. Now, I can accept it on the right. Okay, I've seen that forever. But when you get to extremes on the left, okay, people that aren't in the middle, that don't want to sit, you know, actually sit there and realize, look, you know, we're all being played. And if we don't agree that this is wrong, they're going to turn us against each other. And whoever's controlling the situation, all right, the man behind the curtain with the puppet strings is the guy that's going to win. And, you know, you can't open their eyes to that. Now, I have my problems trying to reach out to less progressive thinking people, but at the same time, if you go to progressives, you're going to encounter people so far left, they won't be in the middle. And they have their valid points, and they won't compromise. So, yeah, I mean, we're at a juggernaut here. And, you know, if, I mean, trying to get them together is the first problem. Assuming we ever did, how do we maintain a dialogue that doesn't alienate either side?
Well, so let me ask you a question. And then I'm gonna, Greg, I've opened your mic. I want to get your response on this as well. The in the book, The Transpartisan Initiative, what's the name of it? I can't believe I'm the Transpartisan book that we were giving to all of our members. The Transpartisan Imperative. The author says that every single that the media and those who want to keep us divided will always paint us, if you plot us out, plot everybody out on the political spectrum, left, right, on issues or whether it's in a hole, they want us to think it's a dumbbell, that you've got everybody on one side, everybody on the other side, and this thin little group in the middle. He said it's not true. He said all the polling data points to the fact that it's a football. that is thick in the middle and it tapers down to the ends. And the lunatic fringe are the ends. Now, we know that the 1% media, because it's good media, they consider it good media, and what people will tune in to watch, have gladly handed over their microphones and their cameras to the lunatic fringe, to the people who are intractable, who are divisive, who would never sit down with their political opposites, those people you described that you encounter. So would it be uncivil to suggest that we simply shut those people out of the conversation and only look for the people who are in the fat part of the football?
Yes,
Greg Russick, what say you?
You're asking me?
Greg Russick, what say you?
I'm
going to ask
absolutely.
Everybody.
I say absolutely. And I've said this before. I'll say it again. If you come to the table for the conversation and you're out to lunch with your reality and your facts, you don't get a seat at the table with me. I'm perfectly fine leaving the lunatic fringe out of any conversation.
Joe?
I can't engage everybody.
I would agree with Greg, but what you have to understand, or at least what I've come to understand, when you're dealing with the 1% media, their focus is on profits and money. And they're going to take the people that public is going to tune in or tune out to. I honestly don't believe they're interested in a viable solution. They just want to put on, if I may, a wrestling match, okay, that everybody will tune into and they can make money on. I honestly don't believe that they care, who wins or loses as long as they're making a profit.
Exactly. My analogy on that, Joe, is it's the old James, it's like seemed like the plot of every James Bond movie is that the bad guy was going to get Russia to think that the United States was attacking him, and to get the United States to think Russia was attacking him, and then they'll bomb each other, and in the chaos, they'll make all the money. Yeah, absolutely. It's like the arms dealer, right? I just want to sell guns. I really don't care who wins. I'm just going to sell guns, and if I can sell them to both sides, hey, that's even better for me. Totally agree. So there's no doubt we have to figure out how to either block out or change the 1% media. And block out is probably the only way, because I don't think we're going to change them unless one of us gets rich enough to start buying up Rupert Murdoch's empire. Bobby, what do you think?
Well, as far as the 1% media is concerned, I mean, the Internet is our avenue for that. And I will say this about that. I mean, there are a list of still journalists, Jeremy Scahill, Ben Swan, Amber Lyon, Abby Martin, and there are some in the mainstream that are still doing their job, which is to make sure that there's a light shown on what the government is doing day to day, right, wrong, or indifferent. The facts, just the facts. I mean, there's plenty of people doing it, but the Internet is what it's all about. You know, I'm sitting in a room right now, a virtual room, with three other gentlemen who are doing exactly what we want the world to do. So I think we can do it. I'm around people all the time. I am frustrated more about interacting with people through the media, social media and Internet, because I want to do it in person. And you've heard me say that before, too. And I belong to groups where I can do it in person. I've got a list of events coming all the way up through the United We Stand Fest where I'm going to be. I got one coming up in Baltimore. I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. and for 9/11. You know, I went to a drone meeting here. I mean, you got to get with people. I'm around people all the time. Well, I certainly don't agree with politically, but you know, we do have a commonality that we want to better our society, and we certainly want to get money out of politics. So I would argue that it is possible. A lot more than it might seem like, and I think that there's movement towards it. And I would,
help me with this one specific question, Bobby. In order to facilitate what you're suggesting, and I'm in total agreement with you, but in order to facilitate it, Is it, would it be uncivil to, and or should we, shut out the people on the far extremes who are just noise in the channel that disrupt, that are just there to disrupt communications and to, and have no interest in having any kind of a discussion? They're just there to scream and yell and call the other guy an idiot.
No, and I don't think it would be uncivil at all, but I would caution the approach like this. We all thought that Jose Canseco was just a bitter guy. And voila, he wasn't just a bitter guy, was he?
I didn't think that.
Well, I'm talking mainstream. I'm saying, you know what I mean.
I know what you're saying, right? McGuire had the better career. He ended up being a relative flop, right? I get you.
What I mean is that they thought he was just some guy running his mouth and not saying anything important, and it turned out that he was saying something important. So there's a little bit of a balance there, but no, I don't think it's uncivil to keep your focus on the cause. You know, I'll tell you something that the wonderful young man Daniel Johnson told me recently with the NDAA issue. I have a complicated opinion about Mr. Snowden. I have a complicated opinion about Mr. Manning. And, you know, I'm the national media coordinator for NDAA, and I happen to write an op-ed, essentially, in our national page that said that I don't think that Mr. Snowden is a patriot at all, and I gave my reasonings for it. And the discussion with some people who are extremists, who are part of the organization, was intense. And I called Dan and I said, our page is kind of blowing up, and I told him why he didn't know it, that he was in Oregon, actually. He said to me something I thought that was very, very profound. He does it a lot, this good 20-year-old. But he said, I don't necessarily know what to think about the Snowden situation from a factual standpoint either, but it's okay to use him as a beacon to shine on the problems that we're having. And he was right. So I asked him to remove my comment from the national page. And then I kept it on my own page as a personal, op-ed on it. But I don't want to distract from the issue. You know, so we need to keep our eye on the ball all the time. And don't let these fringe, and if it's uncivil, it's uncivil. But don't let this fringe extreme detract us. And also don't let our personal opinions about a particular thing deflect us from the goal, which, you know, money out of politics, making our country a better place, making our elected officials accountable, all those wonderful things. Maybe that's it. I guess that's my answer to that.
Well, I like it. I like it. And I want to point out something, because you said something really important. You made a very important example. You talked about the Jose Canseco book. And if, for those of you who are listening that might not know, Jose Canseco and Mark McGuire were teammates. They were called the Bash Brothers. Mark McGuire, of course, went on to set the single season home run record at 70, for 70 home runs in a season. And then he was tested, and he took questionable, although maybe not on the list, questionable substances. And I think there's still an asterisk by his name in the record book. But the point is that this guy, Jose Canseco, after a couple of years, just faded into obscurity, actually got into some trouble on a personal level. And so basically, when he came out with this book, what Bobby was saying is that they just tried to discredit him by saying, he's a bum, he's jealous, he's jealous of the success of these other players, and McGuire especially, so it's just sour grapes. Well, that is something called ad hominem. It is absolutely the favorite play for a politician to try to attack another politician on his character or something, a mistake he's made in the past. And they don't, again, it's not talking about the issues, but if I can destroy this person's character, then everything he says is tainted, and I can just, that guy, he doesn't, sour grapes, all that stuff. That is one of the most typically used ploys by politicians and by anybody who's competing these days. And it's really horrible. And maybe that's what we need. Maybe we need we have John Cashin's civics moments. Maybe we need to be able to have something about propaganda and the uses of logically fallacious arguments, and to be able to point out so people understand, hey, that's a bunch of bull.
Well, we lived through the Tokyo Rose era last year. It was nuts. They had me screaming at the walls of my house with the stuff that I was watching coming across. I'm sure all of us. Like, are you kidding me? Really? You know, I've been saying it for a couple of years. We live in the Tokyo Rose era. And for those who don't know what Tokyo Rose is, she used to be on the radio all the time to our Marines in the South Pacific in World War II, telling them that Tokyo just destroyed California and they're never going home, and the United States lost the war, and she did it 24/7 on our soldiers to beat up the morale of them, and it was propaganda. They had one in Germany doing the same thing.
Yeah. Accused of treason. One of the last people brought up on charges of treason.
Isn't that amazing?
Was actually an American citizen, Tokyo Rose.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And that's what I felt that we were in the last 2 years, 11 and 12, was I'm listening to Tokyo Rose every day. That's all we got. It was amazing. You know, you look at a great example of this, Chris Matthews. Now, anybody who had, I'm 51, we're all in the conversation, we're all on the same age. We all know that Matthews has credentials. He is a journalist. There's no question about it. Man's been in the White House working. He's been around since Kennedy, et cetera. And the way he behaved last year was ridiculous. And I'm looking at him going, really? How can anybody look at you especially doesn't know you, a 20-year-old? It's like, oh, look at that bitter old man. And I'm thinking, here's a guy who's got all his credentials, all his history, and you know when he talks out his mouth, he's trying to tell you the truth. And look at the way he was behaving last year. It was amazing. I thought I was watching Ann Coulter with a penis. It was ridiculous.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, we're going to take a little break, a little pause for the cause, as it were. And we're going to bring in my good friend and fellow board member, John Cashin.
Hello everyone, this is John Cashin, host of the Coffee Party Radio Civics Minute. Did you know that the Coffee Party is funded by our listeners and fans? And not by the super PACs, think tanks, or by a super wealthy individual wanting to buy the American way. The Coffee Party USA is powered by the people, and your passion to bring positive change to our country. But we need your help to continue. With just a small donation, you can help us continue bringing Americans together for a dialogue that attempts to bypass the normal partisan rhetoric that is so common today. The Coffee Party USA is striving to bring you original content from editorials, fact-checking, and video documentaries, while also working to bring you the latest information from all of the 535 congressional districts. No matter what party we may belong or what issues that we follow, one thing is always clear. We are all Americans. Please go to coffeepartyusa.nationbuilder.com/donate and donate what you can to help us move our country forward, united with one voice, e pluralis unum. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin.
That was John Cashin on the board of the Coffee Party, and he's actually our secretary. And if you ever get a chance to talk to John, he's a wonderful guy. Knows a ton. He's a true historian, and he is so wise in the ways of our history. And I think Bobby, you and him would have great time conversing. But while we're taking a pause for the cause, we just heard about becoming Coffee Party members. And I also want to talk about the other Coffee Party radio shows, because this, while We tend to think, of course, here at Press One for Democracy, is certainly we think we have the best callers, but we like to think we're up there and we're competing. But the other shows, of course, are on Tuesdays. We have The Middle Ground with Eric Beiler and what I'm sure is now going to be a long string of guest co-hosts, as it were, now that Michael's stepped down. And that's every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have lunch with Loudon, with our own Janine Loudon, the Coffee Party's executive director. And then on Saturdays, we have Egberto Willis doing Politics Done Right, and that starts at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Saturday, and is a good time is had by all and all the good, all the different Coffee Party radio shows, and it's all about getting the message out on the issues that we've chosen to represent, including, of course, number one, getting money out of politics, and then, of course, but always in how do we promote and change the conversation and get people engaging in political conversation or not political conversation, issues-based conversation, fact-based, civil, and transpartisan. So we want to listen, get everybody's opinion out there on the table, and then figure out where the common ground is and how we build solutions on the common ground. So one of the things that's been brought up tonight has been about the 1% media, and I have to tell you, I'm intrigued. I've only been to this site once, but there is a site now called therealnews.com. And I was intrigued because when I was doing some, was poking around looking for updated news and happenings on the transpartisan partnership, which is the trade treaty that the Obama administration has picked up where the Bush administration left off in. It's totally being done in secret, so nobody knows exactly what it says. We know sketchy details. We know there's 29 total chapters. We know it's a huge, massive thing that's going down, and it's going down in secret. Although there are 600 stakeholders that are involved, various stakeholders in the various different, I guess, pieces, parts of the treaty. Unfortunately, there's 600 representatives of big corporations. So once again, it's not bad enough that they go and they lobby and they buy influence in Washington through lobbying and through donation, campaign donations, but they've now are totally bypassing any kind of a democratic system, and they're basically, you talk about ALEC, right, and the people who write these bills that are pro-business and are pushing their agenda forward. Well, now they're writing an entire treaty, which is a real nice loophole and a way to get around a real democratic-type system and process, and it's pretty bad. So, but in looking at it, when you come to the site, the promo is being done by Lawrence Wilkerson, and if you remember, Colonel Wilkerson was Colin Powell's chief of staff. He was on The Middle Ground, very well-spoken guy, basically talking about how he just couldn't believe what happened to his Republican Party, how it's been hijacked, how there are bigots, and racism is rampant. And he basically, of course, got shunned and locked out of the party for saying those kinds of things. But being, I guess, a good military man, he spoke his mind. And, he's a big boy. He knew what he was getting into, but a really compelling guy. And he's talking about this as a totally, their tagline is no advertising, no advertising, government or corporate funding, and it's pretty amazing from what I saw here. I'm going to go ahead and copy and cut and paste into the chat room the link to this site, and then I want to cover a news story that they've got. While we're sitting on our butts, not doing a whole lot about TPP. The latest member, and remember I told you this started in 2005, well, the latest member nation to be added to the TPP is Japan. They actually just gained entry this year, and already there are huge rallies and protests being held in Japan, speaking out against TPP. So Japan is the third largest economic power in the world, right? So it's China, it's us, or us and China, depending on who you're arguing with these days, probably China and then us, and then Japan. They're the third largest. And so they have very similar concerns to what we do when you talk about opening up trade, free trade, with smaller countries that are just coming up. And they have the, you know, the smaller countries are the ones that have probably more to gain than we do, right? So some of the questions that they were asking was, you know, they were saying, well, do you want TPP? And some of the objections coming back from the protesters were, I like this one, foreign laborers could come into the country, not only the workers, but the companies too, right? So this is basically open borders for your company to come in and set up operations in my country. The fact that they are foreigners is not the problem. We are worried about the effect on wages. For skilled Japanese craftsmen, we worry this will be used to bid down the money we make. So imagine we've been talking about the heartache for years about the offshoring of U.S. jobs. Now imagine we don't have to offshore them anymore. We can actually bring them here. We can actually flood our own country, would be flooded, and we couldn't keep them out, with cheap labor. Now imagine what kind of effect that would have on our economy. And it goes on to, you know, talk about like their agricultural sector. Agriculture is outside of the agricultural sector. I'm sorry, outside of the agricultural sector. Some of the deepest fears the Japanese have about TPP are in regards to what it will mean for the nation's excellent system of national health care. We just got what a lot of people think is or at least a betterment or a step towards an excellent health care system. They say it would destroy our health care insurance system. This is not because, and it's talking specifically about American insurance companies. He said this is not because America intends this result. When the U.S. insurance companies enter our market, they will focus on profitable sectors. But the Japanese health insurance depends on pooling together profitable and other sectors. The U.S. companies will go after cancer and other specialized medicines to make their profits, and this would leave the poor people who can't pay out. And would destroy the destroy their insurance systems. So remember, anything that goes for Japan would go for the United States. So people could come into our markets, cherry pick the more profitable sectors, drive costs down with cheap labor, right? So a Chinese company making, well, I don't know, say solar panels, could open up a factory, import their workers at the cost that they pay, right? not very much. And not only would they be here on foreign soil, or not only would they be here on our own soil, but they would be driving cost of labor down, and they would be destroying American jobs. I have not heard a whole lot of positive stuff about TPP. And so I want to bring back the guys in here, and I want to find out if I'm just missing it. Bobby, am I missing something here with this TPP? Is there anything that I should be excited about?
No, I haven't heard anything positive either. I was involved in a conference call a couple weeks ago on the GMO Monsanto side of that particular thing. I need to go get on the computer. And I think I did it last week. Or not last week, 2 weeks ago. Post a bunch of those links from that. It wasn't on this show. It must have been on Lunch with Loudon. No, I think it was on this show. Anyway, I was involved in a conference call involving that as well. And you know, it's an extension of NAFTA, basically.
Yep.
You know, one of the interesting things about our economy is how little our NAFTA influences are in what has happened to us, our trade agreements. You know, the fact that these corporations are outsourcing all these jobs, doing what they're doing, is a direct result of those treaties and the tariff listings and all that other stuff. And the TPP is an extension of that without question. And my thought was, you know, I found it interesting that so many countries in the European theater, for example, were able to reject Monsanto as often as they are. And yet here comes the TPP, because Monsanto's been kind of quiet in that arena, but they're not. We're just not seeing it. Like you say, so much of it is a secret. And then, of course, the European nations are not part of the TPP, at least not yet. But I have heard, I've heard worse things about it, especially involving eminent domain, creating communities within our country. I mean, it's extensive. It's pretty bad. And I have, I'm not a part of any group that is in agreement with it. I'll tell you that.
Joe, I heard you wanted to pipe in there. What do you think about, what have you heard about PPT? Anything positive?
Nothing. And I'd like to direct you to Transatlantic Free Trade Area, Transatlantic Free Trade Agreement. Pardon me. It's essentially the same thing involving Europe. And this, basically, if you go to Wikipedia and just Google Transatlantic Free Trade Area, it'll give you a better idea of what they want to do. Same thing as TPP. And as I believe you brought up on one of your programs, that what they are doing is the people participating in this are corporations, multinationals to be exact. And in effect, if you're going to get both sides of the United States, the Atlantic and the Pacific, what it, you know, I mean, the appearance would be that what they, the overall scheme would be to make us a one-world economy. And that would entail lowering the standard of living for your average American workers, whereby you can raise the standard of living in other areas where the people that are employed there, okay, can garner better standard of living. You know, it's something really frightening because if someone, if I can frack in Europe, because of that, I can frack in the United States under this agreement. You know, I mean, you have to go to the website to get some of the details, but this thing potentially can, you know, undermine our labor laws, our tax laws, our environmental laws, and this is on both ends of the oceans. And it's scary. You know, I in all honesty, without a one world government, I can't see how this thing would work out for everybody.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is it's not as if we don't have precedents here to know just how bad this is. We do. So NAFTA, when you talk about NAFTA, the biggest loser to me in NAFTA just filed bankruptcy. Not talking about a corporation. talking about Detroit. As soon as NAFTA was done, every single car company and every single parts manufacturer started setting up plants just south of the border. I found this article from 2012. Ford will invest $1.3 billion and hire about 1,000 more workers at its plant in Detroit? No. No, at its plant in Hermosa, Mexico, as it launches the all-new 2013 Ford Fusion and Lincoln MKZ midsize sedans.
Right.
Thank you very much, NAFTA.
Yep. Now, imagine that on a worldwide basis.
Yeah. But again, yeah. the thing that kills me is now they're talking about giving people the ability to set up operations in our borders. We don't have to offshore them. They can come here and they can ship in cargo containers of cheap labor and have them working right here. It's like, I don't know, what is that movie, Red Dawn? Is it like... where you have the Russians invading Iowa, right, and taking over and setting up in the heart of the country and establishing a foothold?
Look at the reciprocal. Are we going to be sending people to foreign countries with a lower standard of living, okay,
Isn't it? Don't you guys find it interesting that you have all this money involved in this situation here, and yet all that we're talking about is how they're going to lower the standard of living instead of raise it for the impoverished world. Isn't that amazing?
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, Joe, when Joe said it, it's like if you think about it as a system of locks, right? If you think about it as a system of locks that help, you know, large boats go up and down rivers where they have to actually, you know, change the level of the water, and so each lock represents in between each lock you represent a country, right? Well, our lock is filled up to the top, and what they're talking about doing is let's just open all the doors and it'll level out. Well, yeah, for us, there's nowhere to go but down. For everybody else, yeah, great, yoo-hoo. Right? Meanwhile, we got people here in this country that can't find work, haven't found work for years. They're suffering. And how are we going to help them? We're just going to bury those people. If you haven't been able to find work in the last couple of years and this something like this goes through, how are you ever going to find a job?
Well, pay attention also to the fact that our government right now, there are members of it, that want the minimum wage done away with. Okay? That seem to feel, well, $3 an hour, $2 an hour is, you know, is acceptable if the person has no other income. You know, they created a mess, and their way out is to destroy all the safety nets, and basically it's every man for himself.
Yeah, and meanwhile, you bring up another great point. Excuse me for interrupting, but you bring up another great point. And here's another one where 70 to 80% of the country has galvanized. I think it's I'll go find the study, the exact numbers, but it's like 70% are for raising the minimum wage $2 to $9.25, or no, 80%, and then still 70% are for raising it to $10. So here again, you have people in Washington talking about destroying the minimum wage when the vast majority of the country is all about raising it. I don't know. I just feel like if I had a button here that I could push and I could just nuke Washington, and we could start again. It's just like I just sometimes feel like.
Well, the problems are entrenched. We sat by in apathy, and we're talking, I mean, really, Reagan became president in 1980. We're talking 30 years of this. And we sat by and let it go. We let Glass-Steagall get repealed. We let NAFTA get put into play. We let the military-industrial complex get ballooned. We sold the farm on the Patriot Act. We sat by and let it all happen. And maybe the polarization of having the black guy in the seat is putting it all on light. Maybe that's a good thing. Who knows? But we sat by for 30 years and let this go on. And we got, you know, I screamed sometimes. I certainly didn't scream all the time. I screamed a good lot, but I didn't scream a lot enough, apparently. You know, and here we are. And they are entrenched.
I think Greg popped back on the phone here. I think I've opened your mic. Is that you, Greg?
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually,
okay.
Bobby was just making the point that I was going to make in the question around free trade agreements. It really doesn't matter in which direction these free trade agreements go. They're a manifestation of the myth and the lie that is trickle-down economics.
Mm-hmm.
We've bought into that once before. Some of us are buying into it again. The notion that as long as you make it good and easy for the rich, the powerful, and the corporate world, that somehow that's going to make it better for the rest of us. I don't know how many times we have to prove that that is a lie, but that's exactly what it is. It's a lie. And until we stop voting for people like Paul Ryan and that ilk, we're going to continue to have this fight with our friends on the conservative side who think that as long as it's good for business, it's good for everybody. It's a lie. Plain and simple, it has to be called out for that. It has to, it's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact. It's a lie.
It is a lie. But here's the problem. When you talk about how we're voting for Ryan, which is Ryan's a moron. But sorry for the uncivil act, but he's a moron. So
you don't have to apologize for me. That's the adjective I use most often too.
But you've got the left, Democrats, getting all that money. Look at what President Obama did when he was elected. You've heard me say this before. One of the first things that man went and did was piss me off by appointing Tom Daschle in his cabinet. I fell out of my chair. I said, where's the change? He is a K Street heavyweight. His wife, actually. He was new to K Street in a sense. I think he was out of the Senate for what, 6 years? Or 4 years? And so it's business as usual. So as much as you have the conservative side, a conservative component with Tanner and Ryan, et cetera, and without question, how come you don't have the voices, at least, coming from, and we're talking about Washington now, not from the communities, coming in Washington, putting a stop to it? I'm sorry, I don't hear enough about it. You know,
there are a couple voices.
Nancy Pelosi is the best, is probably the Washington's biggest and best fundraiser. She's probably the best fundraiser that's ever been in Washington.
Yes, she is.
So they're doing the same thing. They spend all their time fundraising. They spend all their time with K
Street.
Right. You know, it's amazing.
I don't disagree with anything you said, Bob. The only thing I would add to that is that the very few voices that we do hear that actually seem to be sincere in their concerns for the disappearing middle class are only coming from the left side. They're not coming from the right. That what we hear coming from the right are the lies of trickle-down economics as the answer to our problems. The only people who are speaking truth about the changes that we need from a policy standpoint are coming from the left.
All right, hang on a second now. No, hold on. I'm with you to this point, but we need to get to the next level. I can name Bernie Sanders, who is vehemently a union guy. He's made his living being a union guy, and he will always be a union guy. And I get that. And he's about that. I have Elizabeth Warren, who kind of, sort of, is really, it seems to me every time she's talking about more protections and regulations than actual, here's how we're going to get the middle class back to work. So I get Sanders with this, we need to strengthen unions. That makes sense. Now, name some other people and what those positions are that are talking about getting the middle class back to work. Please, for me, because I really don't know.
Those are the only two that come to mind for me.
Okay.
But
so
how many can you name
the
right?
Voices are coming from the left, but there's only two. I agree with you. There's nothing coming from the right.
No, we're winning. 2-0. We're up 2-0.
Is that a super majority?
Hell no.
Like I say, gentlemen.
But we're up 2-0.
Give me 10 people in Washington. I say it all the time. You hear me say it all the time. Give me 10 people in Washington who work for us, and you can't do it.
How do they get elected? I don't understand. Okay. So that's how they get elected. But how is it that if everybody feels that their representatives are not doing the right things, why are there no more? Why are there no recalls? Where is the outrage? Where are the protests? Other than Madison, Wisconsin, that's a local, that's a state level. Where are the protests? Where did Occupy go? Where are the voices of reason going? No, you can't do that.
Occupy hasn't gone anywhere in some degrees. Now, Occupy Homes here in Atlanta is real strong. Occupy Homes in Minnesota just enacted a homeowner's bill of rights, for example,
You know, they're there, you know, but you're right, you know.
You want to remember, Occupy is not a political party. They never set out to be. They set out to be something like the Coffee Party, where what they wanted to do was present the problems to the people, show them what the answers should be, but you have to rely on an electorate. Now, if I could throw somebody in, the only one at the top of my head, Paul Tonko, has been pushing for job bills, infrastructure, okay? There are people down there pushing for it. The only problem is there are those down there that don't want this to happen. And I found my personal belief they don't want it to happen is because when middle-class people get their footing and start earning money and start reviving, okay, they're going to take a serious look at the politicians representing them. And they might, in turn, support financially the organizations that represent them both. And, you know, this is kind of what you're up against. The more
What's that guy's name again?
Paul Tonko. Tonko. T-O-N-K-O.
All right.
I think he's making him up.
No. Here it is.
I'm kidding. Easy. I'm kidding.
Okay. And he's been with Bernie Sanders for a while. And there are others in a caucus, but the numbers are slim. And, you know, I've been watching. Wisconsin's what got me involved in this. When I saw what happened there, when I saw how once they gained a majority, they literally locked everybody out and they ruled by dictatorial command. They all voted together. They've gone so far as to now, you can't even demonstrate against them. You need a permit. Now, where is that written in the Constitution? All right? This is the mentality of members of government throughout the country. This isn't isolated to one state, that, you know, we are in control and we will dictate what we want. We will write the laws so that you have no say, all right? It's happening in the South. It's happening with voter rights. I mean, that's the kind of thing that scares me. And as I said when we began, when I can't voice a concern to somebody in the opposition, where's the transpartisanship? If I can't try to address them in meaningful dialogue, they won't even listen to me. They won't listen to Move On. They won't listen to anybody other than those that agree with them and those that will contribute to their end. I mean, we got some serious problems here.
Okay, so we just we stick to the mission, we double down, redouble our efforts, and we just wait for sanity to catch on.
I would hope. It's going to happen, I'm sure of that.
All right, well, we'll keep meeting here at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Monday, and we'll just keep doing it until we get somewhere.
There is, Dan, can you hear me?
Yes, Greg, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I'd encourage everyone to take a look at the American Anti-Corruption Act, those of us on the phone, those who will listen later. This, to me, reads like a doable solution to change the financing of the electoral process, to change the rules by which Congress operates in order to motivate the appropriate behavior and incentives, and to shine the kind of light on the financing mechanisms as they exist today, all of which can be done without having to overturn Citizens United. It's a movement that is the brainchild of guy who used to run the Federal Election Commission and people on both sides of the aisle. And it seems to me to be an effort that if there was really more of a groundswell for, if they can get to like a million signatures, that's their first goal, you know, they're going to start to really put the pressure on, and we need to do the same thing to our elected officials to find out if they're going to sponsor the American Anti-Corruption Act.
Greg, what the Anti-Corruption Act wants them not to sponsor it, they want them to commit to it.
Correct. Correct.
And,
do they have anybody on board? Has any elected official came out in, at the national level and said, I'm on board?
Not to my knowledge either.
But I think part of the reason might be is what this movement is trying to do. I'm going to put a link in the chat room. It's not a difficult link to find. It's anticorruptionact.org.
Oh, I just posted it.
Oh, we did at the same time, looks like. Yep, okay, good. They're really trying to, before they start to put the pressure on, they want to demonstrate that the American public is paying enough attention. And that's why the first thing they're asking for is, Lawrence Lessig is part of this too, by the way, is to get a million sponsors, a million citizen co-sponsors. Right now, last time I checked, they were like 400 and some thousand. You can create your own co-sponsor page and share it with your friends. I continue to do this through my social media outlets to try and encourage people to take some action. It doesn't take a lot. All you're doing is putting your name on the list as a citizen co-sponsor. And if this, to me, again, just seems like a doable thing. It's not going to be decades in the waiting for a constitutional amendment. It's actually legislation, which, again, because of who's behind it and the care they've taken to craft this, from everything I've read about it, I'm no lawyer, of course, it looks like the sort of thing that won't even require the Supreme Court to get involved in because it is going to be done legislatively.
But that's where the court stuck its face in, and if we want to get Bobby on his, we don't have to do the whole Buckley VL. The point of the matter is that the Citizens United decision was the Supreme Court striking down campaign finance reform as being curtailing free speech. In the very, very, very basic. So
no matter what happens legislatively,
you always can have a challenge in court. Only an amendment to the Constitution cannot be challenged. So I'm not saying, it looks like these guys have done their homework, and it looks like they would be able to put together something that would stand to all the tests, but you never know.
Correct. But I would encourage you to send positive energy into the universe on this and sign the damn thing.
I'm scared now. I'm going to sign it. I don't know what it says, but I'm signing it before I read it even.
Wow. I'm really impressed.
It's funny how we've come full circle because I don't know how Greg found out about this, but I found out about this because of Michael Charney's show, Middle Ground, where they did a show on the Anti-Corruption Act. The gentleman was on, and I became a citizen sponsor during the show.
You know what? That's probably how I found out about it, too. I don't remember exactly, but I have my own citizen co-sponsor page. I use Hootsuite to schedule up automatically constant stream of tweets with the link to try and get people to take action. They've got a hashtag that's hashtag get money out, and these are the things that we can do as individuals that only take a little bit of time and a little bit of energy and makes a contribution. At least I like to tell myself that's what it does. And I went so far as to writing the guys at represent.us an email, which they responded to, and they actually did reach out to Eric and the rest of some of you guys on the Coffee Party board to try and collaborate and get together on this. There's 400-some thousand people. We've got his likes on our Facebook page. Seems like an awful nice audience and the kind of people that would gravitate towards and get activated around this if we put our heads together and our shoulder to the wheel a little bit.
Well, I tell you what. I've heard of this. I've seen a lot of flash and dash around it, but this is the first time I've now been able to see the whole document. Kudos to them,
really?
First of all, for making it. Yeah. I've been looking for the full text. I haven't looked in a while. I will admit that. The first time I saw or heard about this, they were doing it. It was like they were sponsoring or being sponsored by people who were talking about burning their student loan documentation and just forgiving it. The original presentation to me was associated with something I didn't really like. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to read through this puppy and maybe we make this the topic of the show next week. And we talk about the individual approaches, not necessarily just sign it or don't sign it, but let's talk about what they're putting out there and let's see what we can get behind. Let's see what we might want to change or add or subtract or whatever, and let's do that. And I will use my Facebook posting page at 10:30 a.m. on Monday to get people to discuss it. I make that commitment to you,
like
Mr. Russick.
Sounds like a plan.
But that means you have to do what you do every week. You have to be here and you have to co-host for me. You guys are like my three co-hosts. It's great. It means a lot less talking for me, so it's all good.
I was with Represent Us when they marched in Washington. I'm very aware of what they do. I wish I could be more involved, but between Coffee Party and MoveOn.org, my time, I've got just so much I can do. But they are on the right track. Lawrence Lessig is one of the main people behind it, and they have the right movement. If there's a way we can help, I know I brought it up at MoveOn.org, to get this thing off the ground, not to say you don't want to amend the Constitution, but I'm not a young guy, and if I could get at least a corrective path for the country, and then you could move on to amending the Constitution, that'd be fine. But,
realistically, Joe, if you pass this and it goes to the Supreme Court and it does not get struck down, then you don't have to, you're done. You don't have to worry about amending it. Amending the Constitution should be after you've tried everything else, right? So it's a win-win. If it passes and it gets the scrutiny of the court and the court says nope, totally legal, totally constitutional, great, you win, we're done, right? If they strike it down and they do something crazy and say no, then you can say okay, look, we tried. Now it's time to amend. Now you've got that wave that you really need, because obviously to get 3/4 of the country to agree about this and to act on it.
It's going to take a while if it gets done at all. But
three times in my lifetime. All I can say.
It's not impossible.
Three times in my lifetime we've amended the Constitution.
We're not saying it's impossible. We're just saying, do we want to wait 10 years?
Well, I understand. I agree. I listen, can we fix it now? Sign me up. But
there you go.
Don't be negative. Don't be negative.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, maybe I misinterpreted your comment.
We amended the Constitution.
Are you saying that as a positive standpoint or negative?
I'm saying that as a positive. Joe,
okay.
We're going to make sure that you're not on any GMOs and organic, and you're only halfway there then, bud. So I don't know what you're talking about.
All right. Yeah, but let's all remember, all right, you had the Voting Rights Act. You had a bunch of things that should have fixed everything. And somehow or other, over a period of time, they found a way to get rid of it. all right? The ERA, Equal Rights Amendment for Women, still hasn't been approved. So, on a short term, in my lifetime, this can be done if you could garner the support quickly. But
absolutely,
over the long term, for the benefit of all, you still need that amendment. You know, it's got to be stamped down so nobody can mess with it.
All right. Well, we'll take them one step at a time. Guys, as always, it's been a blast. Why don't we do, we'll do what we do at coffee party board calls or coffee party calls. We'll do little checkouts. So everybody's mic is open. We'll start with, we'll go in reverse order tonight. We'll start with, I think that makes Joe, you're up. Final thoughts, prayers, hopes, and dreams.
It was a good conversation. I'm hoping we can move ahead, on a lot of the topics we talked about. I particularly like the civility and transpartisan conversation we had. The issue of voters' rights and money in politics is something we have to continue to explore. But, we should give some voice to other current topics that, blend in with what we're doing. Hopefully we can get people that are on the opposing or opposite side to at least converse with us.
Sounds like a plan. Mr. Rodrigo.
www.freeandequal.org. October 12th, you guys will be there, right?
In Little Rock.
No, at UCLA. UCLA. No, we moved it from Little Rock. It was going to be in Little Rock in June. It blew up so big, we went from Little Rock in June to UCLA campus in October.
I did not know that. How did I not know that? I talked to you weekly. How did I not know that?
This is because you're there looking out at the river. That's
okay, very possible.
October 12th, you better be there, walking around backstage with me. We're going to get Jesse in a room, and we're going to ask him some questions.
Right, like how do you properly apply a full Nelson?
Exactly, I'm there.
working
with Gorilla Monsoon.
There you go. Yeah, bring everybody. Bring their own boa.
Can I be Bruno Sammartino?
Oh,
you can be anybody you want, Greg.
Only if I can be Chief J. Strongbow.
Oh boy, here
Deal.
We go.
Deal.
There we go.
I always wanted to be Was it Pepper Gomez? Who was the guy with the cast iron stomach that his gimmick was they'd run a Volkswagen over him? They really drive a Volkswagen over his stomach. I think it was Pepper Gomez, the man with the cast iron stomach.
Yeah.
That's the guy I want to be.
Okay,
all right,
we all have our alter egos now, and Joe's going to be the grand wizard and manager.
No, actually,
right,
I think Joe could be.
I can try that.
How do I get there? Joe, you're not going to be the manager, Joe. You're going to be Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
There you go.
No, not. Stop.
Flying off the top turnbuckle.
Joe, go with the Grand Wizard. Trust me.
I don't know. The Grand Wizard sounds like some guy with a hood on his head. I'm not sure that works. I need a new image for that one. Anyway, Greg Rusick, you have the final word.
I am going to send you, Dan, pages and pages of tweets that are already written for you to tweet about the Anti-Corruption Act. And anybody else who wants them can have them.
Well, okay.
Upload them and use them.
Why aren't we connected on Twitter, Greg? What's really going on?
I don't know.
See,
it should be.
We need to fix that.
We'll fix that right now.
Okay. Toodaloo, guys.
All right,
Bobby,
sounds good.
Who are you, Bobby?
Say again?
Did he go?
I'm here.
No.
What's your Twitter handle?
Bobby Rodrigo.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
All right, gents. Well, with that, I am going to sign us off. This is Dan Aronson. It has been another wonderful couple hours talking with my good buds, Greg Rusick, Bobby Rodrigo, Joe Pomponio, and Chad in the chat room, as always, hanging out. I do walk around a lot during the show. I had to apologize to Chad. I don't do a good job as a solo host acknowledging my chat room guests. But Chad was chiming in on a regular basis and saying how much he was enjoying the show and the talk. So for all of us here at Press One for Democracy and all Coffee Party radio stations and radio programs, this is Dan Aronson signing off until next Monday. And to quote our good friend Janine Loudon, coffee party on.